I'm Alex Greiner. I'm a former hedge fund manager and author. I published a book on events in Russia during the 1990s, which got promptly banned. So I've remained something of a Russia observer. And let's say that the events of this week, namely the suspect alleged assassination of Yevgeny Prigozhin, the leader of the Wagner Group, is obviously very suspicious. We don't know the facts, much of the facts yet. The investigation hasn't even anywhere near concluding. So far, my understanding is that there is only one suspect in Prigozhin's assassination, and that is the pilot of his jetliner. My own sense is that if we are looking at an assassination, then I would suspect that it's more likely that it's a Western orchestrated assassination. So, you know, my top of my list of suspect would be MI6 and CIA, probably.
A couple of things.
Go ahead, please.
Is that in the initial news coverage there was discussion of people seeing some sort of smoke plume. Apparently that this could be some sort of missile that had hit the aircraft. Certainly it looks as if the tail high up got detached completely from the rest of the aircraft because they both came down separately, which suggests either it was a missile that hit the rear end of the aircraft or else, which is the engines presumably in this jet, which could be a heat-seeking missile of some sort. But the other thing is apparently there was a big load of wine which was put on wherever it took off from, which could potentially have contained a bomb. But anyway, the point is, you know, tell us a little bit about Wagner and why it might be, because it seems to me that they would have to be, MI6 or the CIA would have to actually be in Russia to do this sort of an operation if it was them, and why it might be them.
Well, because I suspect that most of what we know about Prigozhin's little coup stunt from 2 months ago was actually, an orchestrated diversion between Prigozhin, Vladimir Putin, and Defense Minister Shoigu. I don't think that the coup was genuine at all, because it was, the whole thing was quite preposterous. Namely, at the time, Prigozhin has been ranting against his superiors in the Russian, you know, military command and control hierarchy for weeks. That, you know, like in war conditions, that is absolutely that cannot be tolerated. I've served in the military during the wartime, and this is simply unimaginable. The fact that he was able to get away with it, that he wasn't made an example of and punished straight away by, at the very least, being stripped of his command and probably prosecuted and court-martialed, tells me that was all intended probably to serve as a magnet for would-be fifth column coup organizers or assassinations, people who might organize the assassination attempt against Vladimir Putin. Because let's face it, the Russia's Achilles heel is Vladimir Putin. So if there were going to be a successful attempt on his life that could potentially undo everything in favor of the Western alliance. So I think that he was the point man to attract such would-be, let's say, assassins or people who might order the assassination, both internally and externally. And I think that this made him very valuable, and this is why he remained as the chief of Wagner, and why he was allowed to simply set himself up in Belarus, but nevertheless travel as he pleased in and out of Russia to Africa and back, meet with African leaders at the St. Petersburg Russia-Africa summit. None of that would be possible if he were really the traitor to the Russian cause. And so I think that he remained in power. Part of the reason is to provide forms of support to the African regimes that are now, fighting for their independence from the Western colonizers, like France, United Kingdom, United States. And I think that this is why the Western powers might want him and his, apparently this one plane crash took out the whole top level management of Wagner. And so I think that the side that benefits potentially from this is the Western powers.
I mean, the West has been running these kind of private armies for a long time, the private military companies like XE Blackwater with Eric Prince, hasn't it? I mean, in a way, the Russians have sort of caught up with Wagner, haven't they?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think it's probably a convenient thing if you need to take action in a more agile and nimble way without having to justify the expenditure and the action to the, to the parliament at home. You have a way of plausible deniability. Like if something goes wrong, you can say, "Oh well, these people were acting on their own behalf. They were rogue actors. They're not fully under our control," and so forth. It's probably convenient. It's probably very effective as well. And I think that this is one of the reasons why Western powers might have wanted to behead the Wagner organization.
Do you think it will really affect operations much? Surely what happens is junior officers will now be promoted and now be running it.
Well, I think that it might have serious impact. And the reason is that Yevgeny Prigozhin was obviously a person of very high, he had very high degree of confidence from Vladimir Putin. Recall, he was essentially nobody, like a small-time businessman in Russia and, operating at the edge of legality. He ended up in prison as well. But then somehow he found himself as the person who is serving Vladimir Putin food. And the dignitaries inviting him. So he was, he got the nickname Putin's chef. Well, that's extremely, extremely delicate position, because you are in a position to poison people, you could. So, to be in that position, Vladimir Putin obviously had to have very high degree of confidence in Prigozhin. And then he advances from being his chef to being the chief of this military organization that operates outside of the regular Russian armed forces. Again, all of this confirms that he's a very important person. And I think that with him eliminated, you will have to find a replacement. But, it could be that finding a replacement who enjoys such a high degree of confidence could be difficult.
Yeah, it's just a lot of it.
And, there's
not trust, isn't it? But anyway, I mean, most people know what Wagner has achieved in the east and southeast of Ukraine. But what about their role over in Africa? Because there's been some, I mean, if you think about the amount of territory involved, I mean, Niger, for example, is enormous. And it's quite clear that Wagner were very much involved in that successful coup. The West has been trying to counter it, but it hasn't really been able to persuade other African, even pro-West African leaders to weigh in.
Obviously, I think that unlike in the past, because we have seen that the ECOWAS and, by ECOWAS, pretty much the country that runs the show is Nigeria. They have fielded many military assaults against governments in the region to undo coups or to install somebody favorable to the West in those countries. And this time around, they're clearly feeling extremely reluctant. There's obviously, you know, the geopolitical equation has changed. And I cannot say whether this is due to Wagner presence, but I think that Wagner is one of the big elements in that region that is new and different. And so it may be that Wagner is actually what's inhibiting the kind of action and reaction to coups that we've seen over the last several decades. And so I think that might have made Prigozhin a target, you know, because to behead Wagner and to, you know, cause them to disarray, or maybe, you know, get a different kind of management who might be less capable, more easily bought, you know, gives a soft entry to the West. You know, these operations in Africa expose Russia to vulnerability, you know, because whoever is operating in Russia will come into contact with Western intelligence operations, military organizations, who might be able to buy them and use them as a Trojan horse to then run sabotage operations in Russia. So this is extremely delicate.
So, I mean, if you go back to the early 20th century, Nigeria and Niger were one country. And if you look at much of the money that's being made by the West's friends, the wealthy people, the sort of neo-colonial friends of the West in Nigeria, a lot of that wealth is coming from Niger. So, you know, they might be reluctant to say, well, let's, you know, destabilize Niger, because it would also destabilize their income potentially.
Yes, and it's also you know, it's also due to internal Nigerian politics, you know, because the north of Nigeria, the tribes and groups that are politically dominant there are friendly to the Niger coup. They are friendly with the new leaders. They have some sway over Nigerian internal politics. Then there's the question of that Trans-Sahara natural gas pipeline that obviously requires Niger's cooperation for it to be built. Well, you know, Nigeria cut off electricity to Niger, and Niger was obtaining most of its electricity from Nigeria. So it's a very complicated situation. It's very delicate, and we don't know how it's going to play out. But I think that the thing that stands out is that this time around, Nigerians didn't just raise the ECOWAS troops and overrun Niger and put a Western puppet back into the presidential palace.
Yeah, something big is changing, isn't it, in geopolitical tectonic plates almost in Africa?
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
So, Alex, where do listeners find your where do you find your work online, I guess?
Thank you, Tony. The easiest way, I'm on Twitter. My handle is @NakedHedgy. And I also have a Substack, which is Alex Craner's Trend Compass. And then I have my own personal blog and a professional website. But the easiest way to find me is through Substack and Twitter.
And look, a final curveball of a question. Is Biden going to be actually standing next year during the presidential elections, do you think?
You know, I would say yes, but, you know, given his advanced dementia and age and an accelerating pileup of blunders, which are just more and more indefensible, I think they're going to have to find a replacement for him. I just don't see him participating in debates. It's very difficult to see how he can go on for another 4 years. Who they might pull out as his replacement, I don't know. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they draw at Hillary or somebody like, you know, Gavin Newsom or someone like that. It doesn't look likely at the moment, but, you know, the election is long enough away that we might see a lot of surprises between now and then.
Yeah, what about Bobby Kennedy?
Well, it's clear that they don't want him anywhere near the presidential elections. The Democrats don't. And so I think that they will try to eliminate him in some way, you know, maybe in the way that they eliminated the Jeremy Corbyn in the United Kingdom, you know, some kind of a smear assassination job, dig up some parking tickets from 20 years ago or who knows what, you know. Obviously, the game has gotten extraordinarily dirty, indefensibly dirty. This is obviously nothing to do with democracy, with any kind of a regular democratic process. And so I think that we'll only step on that accelerator even farther in their desperation for putting somebody in the White House that they know they can control, whoever that may be.
Okay, Alex, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Simon. Always a pleasure.